Welcome to a new episode of Policy Implications Podcast, where policy meets research. I'm your host, Olga Zadrozhna from Kuzminsky University, where I teach in the research in empirical economics. My guest today is Dr. Ceci Cruz, who's an assistant professor at the Department of Political Science at UCLA. Ceci's work focuses on the connection between electoral incentives and economic outcomes, and is published in the top journals in economics and political science. Today, we'll be discussing her recent paper called Gender, Social Recognition, and Political Influence, co-authored with Charis Tolentino. This paper raises a very important topic of gender gap in political influence, arguing that even though a woman may be elected to the office, it doesn't mean that she has comparable influence to a man in a similar position, which means that the determinants of political influence for women may be more complex than they are for men. So welcome, Ceci, and let's get started. But before we dive into the discussion of the paper, please tell us more about your research and how did you become interested in this topic?
Thank you, Olga. It's a pleasure to be here. And yes, I think this paper actually came about almost by accident. It came out of projects where we were seeing that interventions weren't working the way that we had expected. And that it looked like, for me, as somebody who studies network analysis in particular, I was surprised to find that even very simple things like the social network and the political connections that women had were fundamentally different from the ones that men had. And so this project came out of diving into and digging into these types of factors a little bit more. But yes, and our focus on political influence too, for sure, because we were looking and thinking about, you know, what is it that is making it so difficult for these women, even when they're sitting in those seats and they hold those positions. So we wanted to dig deeper and explore sort of the fundamental differences in influence that arise even when men and women are holding the same positions.
And so how do you define political influence in your paper?
That's the funny one because, sometimes when we think about political influence, we think of backroom brokers or states intervening in each other's affairs. I feel like over in Europe, you know, that's like the instant thing you would think about, right, is like states intervening in each other's affairs. Or even things like brokers or political lobbyists. But I was actually more interested in a very everyday sort of influence, the kind that's just exercised through discussions, persuasion, debate among regular voters. And for me, even as somebody who has studied politics for my whole academic career, when I get my ballot for California, I'll call one of my friends who, professor at UCSD, and I'll ask her, hey, which of these should I vote for? Because I'm not well informed enough to know. And so it's actually coming out of that thinking that I wanted to know who are those people who get those calls, and who are those people who are exercise influence even on regular voters in a very everyday sort of way.
Right. And so before your paper, what did we actually know about the determinants of political influence for men and women? Does the literature suggest that there is a gender gap there?
So there wasn't much on influence per se. And I think that's why we wanted to look at influence, because most of the papers that we had seen were about gender gaps in how ambitious or competitive women were compared to men, or gender gaps in how many women were sitting in seats or, holding office. And we were wondering if maybe that we need to take a step back from all of that and look at what is happening at the point of being influential, at the point of being recognized by your community. And that was something that we didn't find a lot of in the literature. So to be honest, what I was drawing from mostly in thinking about and conceptualizing was literature coming from academia about how women professors don't get the same kind of credit for things. So we do the same service, but it's not recognized, or how women's co-authored work gets counted less than men's co-authored work. So it's like all these really unbelievable results coming from academia that I thought, wait a minute, if that's happening there and there's a recognition gap there, then what if there's a recognition gap in politics as well?
Yeah, great. And so in your research, you actually study the Philippines, and the Philippines, they have the highest score when it comes to participation of women in politics, because they had the female head of the government and also one of the highest numbers of women in legislature in Southeast Asia. But do these statistics reflect the reality well? Do they tell us the full story?
Like I always like to remind my American friends, the Philippines has had two female heads of state, which is two more than many countries, right? But yes, absolutely. I think the tricky part in the Philippines is that what's happening on paper doesn't really match up what's really, you know, in terms of outcomes for women overall. My co-authors, Julian Laban and Pablo Carubin, have a paper with Sahar Parsa where they show that essentially a lot of the women holding office is driven by the effect of family dynasties. So these women that are holding office are daughters of former politicians or wives of former politicians. And what happens when it's women in from those family dynasties that are holding that office, they don't actually have sort of girl power policies. You know, their policies look just identical to the policies of the male politicians. And so for me, you know, thinking of that as a starting point is like, well, you know, then that means that it's not enough to just count the number of people holding in seats in legislature and then decide that, oh, we're, you know, we're doing well, we're number one or we're equal. But what's really more important is looking at how those selection mechanisms go on. Like, are the type of women that make it to those positions of power fundamentally different than the men? And is the pathway for women the same as the pathway for men? And so I think it's actually in some way a bit of an advance already that I'm even asking those questions, right? Before, you know, a generation ago, the whole task was just to get women in those offices to begin with. One of the mayors that I talked to in the Philippines actually had a very funny take on it because, you know, we were complaining about dynasties. And he said, well, I think it's already an advancement for women if I'm willing to consider promoting my smart and capable daughter over my idiot son. You know, so this idea that even if yeah. It's a dynastic effect, right? Yeah. That he thought it was already a victory for feminism. And then in fact, he said such a thing would never happen in my father's day, which is why it's me that's sitting here answering your questions and not my sister. You see what it's like?
Okay. Oh my goodness.
Isn't that great? So
that's crazy.
So then to me, I was like, okay, maybe I'll think of it as a small step, but not enough, right? So I think that's the idea. It's like maybe a first step is getting the daughters of the politicians in, but then now let's find a way in my paper, I guess, is trying to move from there to getting to the point where everybody's daughters can get a seat.
Exactly. And so what data did you use in your paper and how exactly did you measure these political influence?
That was the trickiest part for us because, like I said, you know, it's not something that's immediately obvious. On some level, it's easier to count the number of women holding office than it is to try to figure out if they're influential or not. So what we were doing was we were looking at whether communities recognize political influence among just regular other neighbors and friends that they have rather than thinking about politicians. And so we use a social networks-based measure where we're essentially asking people the same type of question that I just told you earlier about how I call my friend in UCSD to ask for help when I fill out my ballot. And so essentially what I wanted to find are those people, like, who do you call and ask for help? Or, and in our case, what we asked is that whose opinions are respected and recognized when it comes to politics and political discussions in this community. And what we wanted there was not necessarily the politicians or the ones holding formal office, but the friend that you call to ask for help with your ballot. And what's nice as a methodological feature is that that's actually a really easy thing for policymakers to find out because you don't have to ask so many people, right? So the equivalent would be if I asked you, Olha, you know, who in your department, who would you go to if you needed to know the latest on such and such issue? And most people can answer that question. And even if you take a sample, probably people would identify more or less the same group of people. And so that's the measure that we use.
That's perfect. And indeed, that's very easy to collect these data. And so what are your main results here? So you collect the data through the survey, you analyze it. And so what do you find?
The bit of the depressing news, the depressing finding is that even when just the very basic correlations between different characteristics of men and women and their subsequent political influence, what we find is that even when you control for all the things that you could imagine might affect influence, like, you know, your socioeconomic status, whether you hold office, Even if we're accounting for all those things, we find that there's a substantial gap in influence between men and women that remains. So women are less likely to be recognized as influential, even when you're controlling for all these things. And then the other thing that we found is that it's not just that there's this gap, but the fundamental processes, the fundamental pathways that lead to influence and recognition are themselves gendered. So what that means is that how you get influence is a different process entirely for women than it is for men. And I think that's for us what we found very troubling, right? From a policy standpoint, especially, because that means that if you are, you know, if you are USAID doing, or you're the World Bank and you want to do these things to empower women and have women become more engaged in politics, if you are just doing that for everybody, what you end up doing is supporting and increasing engagement for men, but not, or influence for men, but not necessarily for women. Because for women, the pathways are much more complex. It's not always about politics. A lot of it is about being able to help your communities and being engaged in your community, rather than holding formal office and doing those types of things that we normally would associate with influence.
Right. And so in terms of the policy implications, how can policymakers help women foster this long-term political influence? How can they help them?
I think here is where it's a very simple thing. It's a very simple idea of thinking about ways to make our interventions more compatible with the incentives that women have and the ways that women think about influence. So for example, what I mean by that is, you know, there's all this literature showing that in lab games, women are less competitive than men. But, you know, there's these great this great research from Alessandra Cassar and Mary Rigdon that show that if you change the benefits to something that women care about, they're just as competitive as men, right? So it's like, it's just the idea that because if your prize was, you know, $1 or $2, something like that, then maybe the women didn't care. But I think in their study, I'm trying to recall now, but one of their studies was they had moms competing for vouchers for books for the their children. And if you've ever been to a PTA meeting or seen soccer moms or hockey moms, they're like super competitive. And so they were super fighting over those things. And I think policymakers need to factor that in, right? We need to think about what it is that women care about and what are the ways that women want to get engaged, rather than just holding workshops all the time about telling people, oh, you should run for office, or you should do this, or you should do that. And actually, even more specifically, one thing that I found was that just the way that women want to be influential might be different. So if you think about influence in a number of different ways, I feel like men have this, you know, just speaking generally, of course, I don't mean all men, but just in general, there's this idea that you want to be the alpha dog, you want to be at the top of the hierarchy. But for women, if you ask them to describe influence, what they want to be is the center of the network, right? And so both are this idea of influence, but they have really different implications. And I think sometimes policymakers don't see that, that it's not that one is right or wrong, you know, both sort of hierarchical view of networks and a more horizontal view of networks, both are perfectly reasonable ways to characterize influence. But I think you have to fundamentally understand that that is the goal that women have and that what women want to do. So for example, for our interventions that we're doing in Cambodia, instead of giving out you know, prizes or incentives for people to get engaged in their communities, we have an award system where the woman gets something, but she also gets something that she can share in her community. And what we find is that women want that so much more. There's almost something awkward, I think, even for female professors, when we get an award, we almost don't want to, you know, we want to be able to share, and we want to be able to recognize others, and we don't want to toot our own horn. We want to promote and encourage others too. And so we were thinking, well, why don't we make that the incentive? You know, give them a platform to support others if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, that's very smart indeed. And so incentives lie in the center of behind motivating women to participate more in politics and also to exert more political influence. Well, that's very interesting. Thank you very much, Ceci, for this conversation and for this discussion. And I hope indeed policymakers find appropriate instruments to foster this long-term political influence in women. Thank you.
Thank you so much.